Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
And good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing all right today. How about you?
I'm doing great today. Thanks. And I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Today on the Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the seventh stage of Kriya Yoga, Dhyana, or meditation. Listen as we clear up some of the misconceptions about the true mystical state of meditation. Swami will explain why it is essential to understand that meditation isn't a technique, but a state of being. True meditation can only happen with union with the divine. After all, meditation is the seventh stage of yoga. The previous six stages are a requirement and not a list of options. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness, and join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and experience the benefits of a meditative state. So Swami, I went on the online dictionary and I put in the word meditating, and it came back and it says a continued or extended thought, reflection, or contemplation. And then the next definition is devout religious contemplation or spiritual introspection. Now, I know in Kriya Yoga, we have a different definition of what meditating is. I was wondering if you could give us the difference between what I just read off about the definition and what the Kriya Yoga definition is.
Yeah, I think meditation is a very misunderstood concept today, and how we try and define it. And one of the things that if you are going to try and look at the term meditation, a good way to cross-examine it is you have to remember that meditation by definition is the seventh stage of yoga. It's the eighth stage of Buddhism. So to me, that really explains the simple fact that there are or is a lot of preparatory work that has to be in place before you're actually meditating in the true sense of the word. And the prerequisite for the true meditative state is union of the individual with the divine, because without that internal connection, there really isn't any growth. And so there is definitely a difference between a trance state and a meditative state. And I think the more that we start to examine it and maybe educate ourselves, you break it down that there's a big difference between a technique and a process. And one of the things that I have noticed is that we are completely removed from our understanding of the process. And I think it kind of comes down to what is it that we're trying to do? Because if you're happy with using 5% of your mind or your potential, then techniques will be just fine for you. And you're probably the kind of person who's really happy with text editing with WordPad on your computer. It's simple, it's easy to learn, and you're not going to be overwhelmed by the whole thing. But when you delve into the goals and objectives of the spiritual science of Kriya Yoga or any real metaphysical or mystical system, the origins of all of our religions, it was really in being able to access that remaining 95% of our minds or our potential. And if that's what your goal is, then you're going to need a practice to initiate a process. And in the same way that if you want to get more out of your computer, you're going to have to get something like Microsoft Office for Business, because that's going to have a much bigger learning curve, and it will have the possibilities of overwhelming you. But when you're unlocking greater human potential, you have to realize that it's not going to be easy.
Well, as you're talking, I'm trying to think about my, you know, my growing up years and my childhood, and realizing that this was nothing that was ever taught or even spoken of, and even attending church and Sunday school, you know, the focus was on praying and not necessarily meditating. Now, somebody had said to me one time, a long time ago, that praying is a form of meditating. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the way it was kind of explained to me was they said that praying was talking to God and meditating was listening to God. Kind of a difference. And the more I delved into the spiritual science of Kriya Yoga, and the more I understood that it wasn't just some sort of technique that you were looking for some sort of response from, but it was actually a practice to do something. And this concept of growing the mind in a positive direction, the difference between a trance state and a meditative state, really comes down to that there is a difference between your field of awareness and not necessarily your level of consciousness. Because when you are in a trance state, you can take a conscious mind that's about the size of a quarter, and you can put it in another coordinate in consciousness. It's kind of like the way that I interpret what a lot of people do when they do these meditating techniques, that they kind of go to their happy place, whereas a true meditative state is an opening of the mind. It is an expansion of the mind beyond the limits of the body. And I think the differences between the two that's important to understand is that a trance state is a loss of self-conscious awareness. It's kind of like when you're daydreaming in school and you just have no idea what the teacher is talking about. And kind of like the same way that people go into these trance states, and there are benefits. And especially if your goal is survival. But if your goal is growth, then of course you're going to need this union of the individual with the divine, because that's the one thing that impregnates the seed of the mind, and then it starts to open our minds. And this expansion of the mind, this practice to initiate this process, is really what's missing in most of our spiritual communities today. We've really lost touch with it. And so we define things from a perspective that is very limited. Most of the texts, most of the scriptures were written by humans in the adult state. And we're a population of humans in the larvae state, reading these things and trying to understand them. So it's kind of like the experiences of a caterpillar reading about the experiences of a butterfly, and then getting your interpretation from the caterpillar as opposed to the butterfly. And that's what I think is very different about what we teach people here.
So there are activities that we can perform that we might think that we're in a meditative state. Well, I'll say, for example, I'm listening to a book, and this book is about a group of knitters, and one woman has a problem, and she said to the other woman, you know, I don't know what to do, and the other woman said, well, let me knit on it. So she uses knitting as this means I guess for lack of a better explanation, to quiet her mind, to get the answers to help solve problems. So I'm wondering is by executing certain activities, does that put us in a meditative state to be able to, like, say, problem solve in this example that I just gave?
Well, to answer your question, it comes back to what I was saying earlier. There's a difference between the trance state and the meditative state, or the true meditative state. And not that there isn't benefits to the trance state. When, you know, anyone who is in what they call the flow state is when all of your effortful work now becomes effortless. But that's not to be confused with an expansion of the mind, as opposed to evoking this relaxation response, or this alpha state, where your mind actually moves into a different dimension of your reality.
So are you saying that, let's just take a writer, for example, and I've heard that expression where, you know, they have to be in this flow state to be able to get these words on paper or the thoughts on paper. Are they in a trance state, or are they in a meditative state, alpha state that you had mentioned?
Well, again, that all depends. It all depends on your preparatory work. Because when you start to look at the seventh stage of yoga, and you start with yama and then niyama, and I think as we have gone over in these shows that your first stage of yoga, yama, your fifth yama is brahmacharya. It's carrier of Brahman. It is this internalization of a different energy field as a source of sustenance in your body. And that is what initiates a progressive cycle. But you can't get this invisible, intangible source of sustenance into your body if you do not purify your body. So your second stage of yoga, your niyamas, your first niyama was shaucha, or purification. Now, purification creates this opportunity for the invocation of this invisible, intangible source of sustenance. Then asana, postures, working with your physical body. Because through repetition comes absorption. It's so important that you feel connected to this invisible, intangible source of sustenance. And your next stage of yoga, which is pranayama, which is the relationship between life-sustaining force number one, thought, and life-sustaining force number two, breath. And again, the misconception of pranayama is that it is control of breath, when in reality is control of thought. Because it is your number one life-sustaining force. And controlling how we think, and thinking right, and using what you need to produce the feeling that you're happy, those are all practices. Then your last four stages of yoga are the same practices experienced at a different level of consciousness and a different degree of awareness. Because it is the opening of the mind that is what makes this practice different than somebody who just practices a meditation technique, if that helps.
You know, it does. I do want to get back to that. So, but for right now, listeners, we're going to hold that thought and pause to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back in a few moments.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. A complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process. Starting with the separation from mother, including the labors and tasks of the hero and the return as a whole person. Practice makes perfect only when practice is whole. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. Samadhi, or total consciousness, is experienced by knowing and doing with devotion. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303 or www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste.
Purna Maria, Purna Meva Vashishate.
And welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, sorry, my question to you is, so say I am a caterpillar, and I think I am meditating. So, but now I'm listening to this program, and you've brought up a lot of very good points. How am I going to look at what I'm doing and come to this realization that I may really not be meditating? What are the telltale signs that I can look at that would tell me that?
Well, first of all, if you have any cravings that are coming from your physical body, because when you're approaching the science of yoga, one of the first things that you have to understand is that you can't separate the mind from the body. In fact, the physical body is a manifestation of your mind. And that's one of the reasons why most people take on a meditative practice, is because of the disturbances and the turbulence that's going on in the physical body. And so if you evoke a trance state, then you haven't really fixed the problem, but you have kind of put yourself in a different coordinate of consciousness, which does have the possibility of calming you and having some sort of positive effect, because anything that we do has a 37.5% placebo effect. But when you're doing true meditation, it's not something that is a crapshoot. It's a very deliberate practice. Most of what you do is under the jurisdiction of your conscious mind. And then, like I said, if you have cravings and disturbances in your physical body, then your body is longing for something visible and tangible. And so you are drawn to, or you desire particles, or even if you desire waves, you're drawing from a resource of energy that will not facilitate growth of the mind.
So I have a two-part question. So we have to have our bodies have to be still, I guess. So we don't want to have any cravings in the body. So the body has to be still, so that will allow the mind and the body to make this connection, right, to spirit.
Yeah, it will allow the mind then to expand. And that's the beauty of the practice, is that if you really cross-examine it, the two things that we do the most are thinking and breathing. And if you are accustomed to using what you really do need, your number one need, then the availability of this source of sustenance produces this calming effect in your body. So as long as you have your next breath, there is a feeling of calmness and confidence. And that platform now allows you to start to expand the conscious mind. So here there's not a loss of self-conscious awareness. It's not a loss of body awareness. But it does evoke this progressive cycle that produces a more inclusive point of identification.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Now, the second part of my question is, I've read throughout the years that, and this probably falls under technique, but I've read that there are some authors out there that believe that you should have this special space physical space in your home or wherever to perform meditation. And to, you know, if you want, light a candle, incense or whatever. And this is supposed to prepare the body and the mind for this activity. But wouldn't that fall under looking for your external environment to give you something that really has to come from the internal environment?
Well, I would agree with you on that, that if you are attached to your candle or your cushion or your place in the building, then to me, it's another unnecessary dependency. And again, it all depends what you're trying to do. If you want to grow psychologically and spiritually, then you really are looking for liberation and freedom that comes with the internal connection. And you put most of your efforts in internalizing the right symbol to produce that feeling that you're happy. And then from that platform, from that effortful work of concentration, then it evolves into the what is called the effortless flow state of meditation.
Now, is this what you mean by saying that it's a state of being? So it doesn't matter what I'm doing, whether I'm driving a car or knitting a scarf or washing dishes, making dinner. We can do all of those activities, but I think you said earlier that we're at a different level of consciousness. We're in a different state of being, performing our everyday duties. It's nothing. Meditation is not a separate activity in our world. We don't need to make time to meditate.
Right. It becomes your mode of operation. You're basically in the flow state when you are performing anything that you're doing.
Well, I think that's a wake up call for a lot of us, thinking that we don't need to do that as a separate activity, but we have to, as you explained earlier, we have to make sure we have all those other things in place, those other stages, right? The first four stages of yoga have to be in place even before we can even think about getting into this other state of being.
Right. Right. And again, I really think a lot of it comes down to the simple fact that we have been kind of socialized with such a watered down version of spirituality, and we have accepted that. And so our standard is so low that we're content with surviving and just accessing this 5% of our minds. And anything that suggests going beyond that becomes overwhelming. Whereas for the person that is looking to grow psychologically and spiritually, then of course you realize that no matter what it is that you are going to undertake, if you were going to become a musician or an athlete or a dancer, or even in business for that matter, it's going to have a certain degree of learning that's going to take place. And there's going to be a lot of practice that you're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same is true with the experience of meditation.
Interesting. I remember years ago being in a group of fellow black belt instructors, and one of the masters was leading us through the beginning part. And in the beginning of all of our practice sessions, we had to kneel and we would meditate or just try to quiet the mind for a few moments before we began our practice. And one of the gals stood up and she said, "Well, I don't meditate on such a superficial level." And of course, we were all just absolutely horrified that she would say this in front of a group of these fifth, sixth, seventh degree black belts, right? We were just horrified. But then I was thinking, wow, superficial level. But in a way, now I understand meditation to be something a little bit different. And maybe that's not really what she meant, you know, the superficial level of meditation. But now I have a different perspective of that term, because isn't that what we do when we sit in front of the altar? This is a superficial level of meditation.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like, what we think is being spiritual isn't spiritual at all. And so these are things that, you know, we're working through. That's why one of the major obstructions to enlightenment is ignorance. And that's why yoga is not just a path of action of things that we must do, but it's a path of knowledge and it's a path of devotion.
So it could be that people are meditating, I don't use the phrase for the wrong reasons, but so they're meditating to try to clear their mind and not meditating to make this connection. That's a big difference, I think.
Well, I think the big difference is that the connection is what gives everything that we do power. And the more that you understand just that dynamic, that it's this internal connection that gives us virtue to overcome fear. It gives us wisdom to overcome ignorance. It gives us enthusiasm to overcome laziness. And it gives us a sense of purpose to overcome selfishness and to recognize that this is missing. And so the power that comes with the internal connection is what gives us the leverage to make the rest of our lives enjoyable.
So that puts the responsibility on us to maybe just sit back and examine what it is that we think that we're doing. Let's examine and see, are we really meditating? What is my level of consciousness? We have to determine that first, right?
Well, actually, it's measured more by your degree of awareness than your level of consciousness. Because like I was saying, we can plumb the depths of the mind in a very limited way, with the mind being small. You can put your mind in any coordinate of consciousness. In fact, we visit three dimensions of reality every day. When we go from waking state to dream state to dreamless state. But now the whole key to a metaphysical or a mystical system is to be able to make those shifts in consciousness without losing consciousness, which is what we're doing when we fall asleep or we daydream. And the reason for that is that the mind is small. And the analogy that I use, it's kind of like being in a dark room with a flashlight. Mm-hmm. And the true meditative state is like being in a room and turning the light on.
Well, I do know that you have this all laid out in your video for the Theory 2 program that lists all the 8 essential stages. So I encourage all our listeners out there, if you haven't already, to access those via the website. So we do want to start closing down our program. Thank you for listening to our show today, and be sure to visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com. So once you're there, if you like the show, make some comments. And next week, we have a great show coming up for you. We're going to be talking about the rites of passage. So Swami, anything you'd like to add about today's show?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join us and join our spiritual advance and maybe get this light in your soul and maybe feel a little beauty in your person, harmony in your home, bring a little honor into our nation and eventually peace on earth. And like you said, Theory 1 is probably the best way that you can really kind of get your arms around the magnitude of the science of yoga. And with that, I'll wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton along with Swami Jayananda signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.